have a request this morning that you would pray for me over the next month. I'm going to be taking my first ever study leave, 11 years since I've been at Hill Country Bible Church, and I'm going to be spending basically the next month in prayer and reading and evaluating and praying, and the elders have given me a list of issues that they want me to think about, and the staff as well. And primarily what I'm going to be doing is asking God for His direction for the year 2001 for Hill Country Bible Church. And so I will be gone for the next month. Probably wouldn't be a good idea to email me because I get about 50 of those a day anyway, and I'm a little bit fearful of what that will look like when I return. So you might want to just email Doug. Because he just came back from his two-week vacation, so he's ready to handle all those requests. And also, Mitch is going to be preaching for the next month, and we're looking forward to a series that he'll be preaching, and he'll do an exceptional job. So if you would pray for me, that would be a great blessing. The top-grossing film of 1987 was a movie entitled Fatal Attraction. That movie starred Michael Douglas as a unfaithful husband that ventured out into the world of an affair with Glenn Close, and after just a short time he realized that this wasn't really going in the right direction and broke it off and thought, well, you know, it's over, it's behind me, I messed up, I'll just move on with my life. As if you can do that. And what happened in the movie was Glenn Close decided she didn't want to break it off, and she began to pursue him, even to the point of a psychotic breakdown when she discovered that she was pregnant and carrying this man's baby who all of a sudden didn't want to have anything to do with him. And so the rest of the movie is about how she made his life a living hell, trying to get him to come back into the relationship. And in the process, it destroyed people and it destroyed lives. And originally, the film was intending to show Michael Douglas, the unfaithful husband, as the villain, but when the audiences that previewed the movie watched it, they hated Glenn Close so terribly that they changed the ending of the film to make her out to be the bad gal. What's interesting to me is the audience response, because people in our culture have been told that you can venture into sin, you can do some things that are wrong, and you can still come back to normalcy and make everything work out in your life. And so when they saw a film that was going to literally destroy a man's marriage, they wanted to make a villain out of the woman, because everybody likes to live within the myth that you can do things that are immoral and still be able to go back to your normal, average, everyday life. Now, last week, we talked about sex from the book of Proverbs, and we looked at the positive aspects of sex and what God says is good about sex, and we're going to talk about sex again this week. We're going to talk about the negatives, but if you'll recall, last week, we started out with a premise, and that premise is that God's laws of nature cannot be broken without consequences. God's laws of morality also cannot be broken without consequences. After the sermon last week, Scott Butler came up to me and he said he saw a great t-shirt. Let me show you what was on the t-shirt that Scott Butler saw. It's about gravity. He said, gravity, it's not just a good idea. It's the law. Well, now we understand that, right? You know, if you leave your feet, you will fall. Okay? It's not just a good idea. It's the law. How about this one? Maybe we should get a t-shirt that looks like this. Sexual morality. Let's go. It's not just a good idea. It's the law. To be immoral sexually will cause the same kind of fall. Maybe not in the same moment, maybe not in the same way, but God has established His laws, and His moral laws are just as binding, and to violate them, you will face the same consequences as violating the laws of gravity or the laws of nature. And so this morning, we're going to talk about what happens when people violate those laws and look at the anatomy of a fatal attraction. And I'd like you to open your Bibles, first of all, to Proverbs chapter 6. And we're going to look at a couple verses in Proverbs chapter 6, and then we're going to go on to Proverbs chapter 7. In the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 6, we read a very interesting statement. Look down to verse 27. Talking about sexual immorality, the question is asked in verse 27, can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? Answer, no way. If you take fire and you scoop it into your lap, take the hot coals off of your summertime campfire, pile them up on your jeans, what is going to happen? You're going to get burned, right? You'll get fried. You'll get toasted. Or spread those coals out and walk across those with bare feet. What will happen? You'll get burned. Now, this passage is talking about immorality. And he is saying in this passage that if you play with fire, you're going to get burned. Now, fire has both a positive and a negative use. Fire is what heats our food, warms our clothes, warms our house. It's the engine that drives most of our cars. Fire has a very, very positive use, but fire misappropriated can burn up a whole forest. It can destroy acres and acres of land, like the one we saw in New Mexico recently. Fire has good use, but it can also be dangerous. In the same way, sex has a very positive, good use, but it also is dangerous. In fact, last week we looked at a definition of sex, and let me share it with you again. Definition of sex is sex is a gift from God given as human glue to cement two people together for life. And as human glue, it's very powerful. Two people come together, form a marriage bond, God puts them together with this very powerful union called sex. And that touches the emotion, it touches the physical, it touches the spiritual. It's a great, great thing. And it was intended to stick people together for life. But that very powerful force that can put two people together for life can also be very destructive if it's misappropriated and used in the wrong relationship. If you think that you can misappropriate this incredible fire, this passion of humanity, this human glue that cements two people together, if you think you can take that and use it in an inappropriate way and not get burned in the process, you're really kidding yourself. You'll get burned if you use it inappropriately. And so, in Proverbs chapter 7, we see a warning given from a father to a son. And as we look at this warning this morning, I'm going to walk through the anatomy of a fatal attraction. In other words, how do these things happen? Now, you run into people that get involved in immoral relationships and you think, how did that happen? Or a teenager that committed their life to purity and then before you know it, they're sleeping with their boyfriend or sleeping with their girlfriend. You say, how did that happen? Well, let's look at how that happens this morning. You'll notice in chapter 7, verse 1, Solomon's talking. He says, my son, keep my words and store up my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and you will live. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your finger. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call to understanding your kinsman. They will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words. And then he tells a story. Here's the father watching, observing, and telling his son and warning his son. He says, at the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who lacked judgment. See, and I'm looking out, and I'm seeing a kid, young man, not necessarily a bad young man, just a naive, stupid, inexperienced young man, which, by the way, all young men are. Okay? And most old men. And especially in this area. Now, some of you ladies are going to object to the characterization here because the woman is portrayed as the pursuer here. But keep in mind, here's a father talking to a son, and he's saying, I want you to see what can happen to somebody who's unexpecting, who's naive, who's not paying attention, which, like I say, most men are not very smart when it comes to understanding this. He goes on to say, he was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house. At twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in, then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute with crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the streets, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. Now that little parenthetical comment there, verses 11 and 12, is intended to communicate that this is not an isolated incident. How could this particular woman be on every street corner? Obviously, she can't. This is poetic language saying that on every street corner, everywhere you turn, everywhere you go, this kind of danger is present. You don't have to look far to find out that there is a problem waiting to envelop you. All you have to do is sit down in front of your computer and click on that little round world called the internet, and somebody is out there waiting to destroy you. You don't have to go far. You just turn around. At every corner, this kind of danger is present. Goes on to say, verse 13, she took hold of him and kissed him, and with brazen face she said, I have fellowship offerings at home. Today I fulfilled my vows, so I came out to meet you. I looked for you and have found you. I've covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloe, and cinnamon. Come, let us drink deep of love till morning. Let us enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and will not be home till the full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once he followed her like an ox going to slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. Now, in this passage, I believe that we can understand the steps or what it takes for a deadly encounter to ensue. And for those who are naive and don't understand how this happens to people, believe me, there are people who sat where you are and said, I don't know how this happens to people, who it eventually happened to them. Okay? So what I'm going to do this morning is kind of walk you through the anatomy of a deadly encounter. And here's the first part of it. The first thing that happens when two people get together in an inappropriate way, number one, is crossing barriers. Crossing barriers. Barriers have got to be crossed for an inappropriate relationship to be ensued. Notice in verse 13 how forward and brazen this woman is. When she sees him, the first thing she does is she takes hold of him and she kisses him. Now, I believe that God has placed within every single one of us barriers. It's called personal space. Every one of us has something that we're uncomfortable for a stranger to invade. I think that happens both on a physical level and on an emotional level. There are certain things that you may feel about somebody, there are certain things that you may think about somebody, but you don't say it because you would say, that would be inappropriate, I would be crossing a barrier. Or standing in proximity to a person, or putting your hand on a person, or touching a person, you say, I wouldn't do that because I wouldn't want someone to do that to me. I don't want anybody to cross into my space, either emotionally or physically. What this woman does is she bridges that gap swiftly, quickly, and effectively. She comes to him, she takes a hold of him, and she plants one on him to cross the barrier that everybody normally and naturally feels. So let me share with you that once a barrier has been crossed, people either immediately back away and revolt, or they feel more comfortable. And here's the first danger sign. Whenever you're with someone that you shouldn't be with, and you begin to cross barriers,
you are headed down the road of a fatal, disastrous encounter. That's where you're going. Whenever you look at someone and you see something in them that's attractive to you, and you're not supposed to be attracted to that person, and you feel this urge to go out on a limb and say something that you shouldn't say, that's a barrier there. Do not cross it. Whenever you feel the desire to reach out and touch someone that you shouldn't touch, or to touch someone in a way that they shouldn't be touched, that is a barrier. Don't cross it. Ladies and men, if somebody you know, a friend, a coworker, maybe somebody that you're dating or seeing, crosses a barrier with you, you need to immediately identify that. Look them in the eye and say, that's inappropriate. I don't want to have this conversation. Don't touch me there. Don't touch me that way. Don't approach me that way. I am not interested. You say, well, this kind of stuff happens all the time. You know what? Affairs happen all the time. The first step in the process is crossing barriers. I've done all kinds of different work in my life to get through college and seminary. And one particular job I had a coworker, and every time I would look at a project with this coworker, she would stand against me. She would just walk up and she would just stand and put her body against mine as we looked together at the project or the thing we were working on. You know what happened? The first time she did that, I thought, man, what's she doing? That's very uncomfortable. But, you know, it's no big deal, right? It's no big deal. Second time, third time, fourth time. After a while, it felt very comfortable to me to have this woman come up and get close to me, get up against me when we're standing there together. It's just work, right? What happens when you let barriers come down like that is you get comfortable with people in ways that you shouldn't be comfortable. Those barriers are God-given. Leave them up. Second, we see a rationalizing of immorality. Look at verse 14. With brazen face, she said, I have fellowship offerings at home. Today I have fulfilled my vow. What is she saying? Well, there's one of two possibilities. One thing she could be saying is that today I went to the temple and I sacrificed a fellowship offering, and part of the sacrifice is to take the meat that's left over and eat it in celebration on that day. So I've got food at home. I've got a big meal planned. Come on over and eat with me. But it's more than that. It's a celebration of a religious event. In other words, she's saying that I've got something great going on in my life. It has religion in it. And I want you to come and be with me at this special time. How could anybody say no? You see what she's doing? She's bringing God into this thing. You know, it's amazing to me that as shameful as immorality is, over and over and over again, I see people bringing God into their immorality. I see people saying, well, you know, God threw me together with this person. That's why I'm leaving my husband. Or God just worked out the circumstances for me and this woman to be together. And I know that that's God. What is that? That's rationalizing immorality. God never puts you in a relationship that will break the marriage vows that you've committed to. God will never put you in a relationship that justifies sexual immorality. He will not do that. No matter how much you want it to be God, it is not God. The other possibility, and probably more likely, is this is a little bit of a confusing translation of the text. I think what's really being said here is she's saying, basically, I have fellowship offerings that I need to offer, and I need to fulfill them soon, or today I need to fulfill them. In other words, the money that you will give me for this particular encounter will go to good purposes. It will be the money that I need to pay to fulfill a vow. In other words, now she's saying, this is really going to help us or help me spiritually to have this encounter with you. Again, the same concept, rationalizing immorality, saying something good can come out of this. Last week I had a number of people who said, Tim, when you made the statement that people involved in affairs often say that this is actually helping their marriage, is that really true? The answer is yes. I regularly hear, especially on the front end, well, you don't know how much this helped me get in touch with my spouse. You don't know how much this rekindled in me a sexual drive that I thought was long dormant. This ultimately, I thought in the beginning was going to be positive. Or, you know, I prayed about it and I think God's leading me in this direction. That's called rationalizing immorality. The third thing we see in this passage, the third step, is inflating egos. Look at verse 15. She said, so I came out to meet who? I came out to meet you because you're so special. I looked for you and I found you. One of the most subtle and one of the most powerful means for breaking down a sense of propriety is just simply flattery. Because you know what? Every one of us loves to hear flattery. People love to hear that. When someone looks you in the eye and says, oh, you know, if only you were married to me. Or you deserve a good man. Or, you know, you are the kindest man I've ever met. You know what that does? That starts inflating the ego. All the other boys in my class, they're all so immature. But you guys, oh man, you're so mature. You know what that does? It starts fanning the flame of our deep desire to be adored. And we want someone to adore us, someone to love us, someone to think that we, among all the people of the world, are special. When you start entering into flattery of other people, flattery that's inappropriate, you are setting a trap for yourself and for that other person. When you're listening to him tell you, ladies, how beautiful you are, you're the most beautiful, he's never seen anybody as beautiful as you before, think how many other women he's saying that to. I had a friend who got in an affair a number of years ago, and she told me, you know, that he just built me up, he built me up, he built me up. My husband never built me up, but he built me up, he built me up, he built me up. And after it was all over, she found out he was doing that with about four other women. You know, they're all the most special. Flattery, watch your egos. Because a building up of an ego can also be a lowering of your defenses. And finally is arousing the appetites. Notice in verse 16 through 18, she says, I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt, appeal to the eyes. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloe and cinnamon, appeal to the sense of smell. Come, let us drink deep of love till morning. Let us enjoy ourselves with love and appeal to the sensual. There will always be an appeal to the sensual as part of these kinds of romantic encounters. And when you start seeing your sexual energy being aroused, driven toward a person that is going to be inappropriate for you to be with, if you're married, someone outside your marriage, if you're single, to have a relationship with someone, a sexual relationship, when you start to feel that inside, that is a warning sign. You need to back off. You need to move away. You need to get away because you're beginning to have a drive or an arousal toward another person. Look at verse 21. It says, with persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. Verse 22 says, all at once, he followed her like an ox going to slaughter. You know, one of the characteristics of an ox going to slaughter is they have no idea what's about to happen to them until the big heavy hammer comes down on their head. They're going into a feeding stall just like they have 100 times before. And then it's over with. Bam! The end of life. Because you see, once you've committed an immoral act, you've committed an immoral act. You can't undo that. You know, I used to think to myself, I wonder how many times the president of our United States, Bill Clinton, sat in his office and thought to himself, if I could take those encounters back. I mean, how much stupidity, how much humiliation, how much anguish have I brought upon myself? But you know what? You can't do that. Once you've stepped in, you've stepped in. Notice what he says in the next verse. He says, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. Willful ignorance, taking chances that ultimately cost you your life. I was very interested to see an article in the newspaper
back in May. Actually, it was the Wall Street Journal back in May, written by Bill Bennett to Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani, the mayor of New York, who was running against Hillary Rodham Clinton for the Senate race in New York, it became public that he'd been involved in an immoral relationship. And in the whole process of that, there were a lot of people who were saying to him, you know, you need to keep up, you need to run, you need to go forward, because this is no big deal, this is your private life. And besides, leaders who show their humanness, their humanity, they come across more human, more normal. And so people think it's okay for you to do things like this. And Bill Bennett writes, in a current trendy barbarism, some commentators claim adultery has a, quote, humanizing, unquote, effect that makes public figures more, quote, interesting, unquote. This, of course, corrupts the notion of what it means to be human. If betraying a wife makes you more human, then does one's humanity grow too with the betrayal of one's parents, of one's children, or of one's country? Just how many betrayals make you fully human? All of this takes place in a particular cultural context. The institution of marriage is in trouble. The distinguished historian Lawrence Stone has written, quote, the scale of marital breakdown in the West since 1960 has no historical precedent and seems unique. There has been nothing like it for the past 2,000 years and probably much longer. A recent Zogby poll found that by an overwhelming margin, the breakdown of the family was considered to be the most important problem facing the nation. Yet most New Yorkers apparently aren't concerned about the revelations of the past few weeks. Adultery is, they say, a, quote, private, unquote, matter of no public consequence. What's interesting here in this passage is that Solomon portrays this young man who steps into an immoral relationship as not being human, but being less than human. Like an ox, like a deer, like a bird. Because humanity, or being human, the ideal should be, now think about this, the idea of being human should be that we are higher than the animals, that we are able to keep our promises to others. Not like the animals do, they don't make covenants. That when we put on a wedding ring, that ought to mean something. Humanity used to be considered a noble thing to live up to, not an ignoble thing to live down to. In our current culture, we're saying that being human is being like animals, not being better than animals. Isn't it interesting that in a world that says up with humans, in a world that says human dignity is so important, that it's so important for everybody to have a great self-esteem and the power of mankind, that really we're defining humanity as simply animalistic behavior? If you step into immorality, you're stepping in to an arena that the animals live in, not fully human, acting like brute beasts. Well, let me give you a little quiz. I want to ask this morning, as we wrap up, how vulnerable are you to a fall? There are four questions to ask and answer. In asking this question, how vulnerable are you to a fall? The first one is, number one, where has my heart been lately? Where has my heart been lately? Notice in chapter 6, verse 25, he says, do not lust in your heart after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. Wherever your heart is, that's where you're going to end up. So if your heart is dissatisfied, if your heart is pondering, thinking about, looking at what would it be like to do something immoral, if that's where you're living, chances are you're going to end up there. Guys, the internet pornography, that is not some kind of innocent outlet for you. That is actually feeding the heart, living in a world of immoral thinking. And ladies, to be on the internet, emailing some strange man in another place and sharing your deepest, darkest secrets, that's just as dangerous. That's just as dangerous. Where is your heart?
What are you thinking about? If you're pondering doing something immoral, if you're thinking about the thrill of the possibility, you're going in the wrong direction. Second question, what signals am I sending out? What signals am I sending out? Look at verse 7, or chapter 7, verse 10. It says, then the woman came out to meet him dressed like a prostitute with crafty intent. Now my question to you is, today when you walk through the mall, or if you go down on 6th Street and hang out, what does a prostitute look like? Can you tell the difference? What's the difference today? You know, it must be getting harder and harder for the, quote, working girls to come up with an outfit that truly distinguishes them from the rest of our culture. Because the reality, ladies, is that the styles and the fashions today are very, very immoral. And what you display by what you wear, whether you intend to or not, sends a strong signal to men. And if you don't believe it, ask your husband. And if he doesn't tell you the truth, ask your father. And also, let me just add to that, that lines on clothing point in directions. So when you stand in front of the mirror and you look at yourself and you say, where are the lines in this outfit pointing? What are they highlighting? What are they directing someone's attention to? Be assured that the men out there will be more discriminating in what they perceive your intent to be than you are. It's very important that if you do not want people to approach you in an improper way, in their thoughts, or in an actual encounter, that you dress in a modest way. I know it's very hard to do that in this culture. It's very hard to find clothing that are modest to wear. But immodesty really has a huge impact on the whole desensitization of people thinking it's okay to get involved in this kind of behavior. What are you wearing? Men, what are you saying to people? What signals do you give off? Are you a flirty kind of a guy? Are you the kind of guy that's always noticing how women look, always complimenting them? You say, well, that works. That's what I want to do because that, I mean, that really kind of builds a bridge. Well, that may build a bridge, but it can also build an inappropriate bridge. Watch what you say. That story came home to me in a big way when I was in graduate school. I was working in downtown Dallas, and to make it through the summer, I was working with a guy, and we were installing office furniture in office buildings. And so this was back in the old days when I was a little bit more buff than I am today. If you can imagine that. And this guy and I used to just have a good time kind of going in and flirting with the women who worked in the offices. Now, because we were installing office furniture, we worked with a lot of office managers that were women, and we worked with a lot of secretaries, and we'd go in there and we just, you know, kind of, it was kind of this running thing between us. We'd make comments about their appearance and, boy, you look nice today, and, you know, different things like this. And, you know, we'd get all kinds of attention. It was amazing how much attention we'd get by using flattering words. It came home to me one afternoon. It was a Friday afternoon. We were back at the warehouse. We were wrapping up the day. And two ladies pulled up in a car and invited us to spend the weekend with them in Houston. And I thought, what in the world? How could this happen? I mean, how in the world could we go from just kidding around to this kind of intensity? And at that day, I swore to myself, never again. I don't flirt. I don't flatter. That's too dangerous. Watch what signals you're sending out. They're dangerous. Number three, how close am I getting to danger? How close am I getting to danger? Look at chapter 7, verse 25. Chapter 7, verse 25 says, do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. Well, when you start going down the path, when you start feeling inside that you have an attraction towards someone that's either an inappropriate attraction or it's an attraction to the wrong person, don't play with that. Don't say, I'll see how far I can go with this and then I'll be able to back off. When you start going in the wrong direction, the slide becomes slipperier and steeper each step of the way. You may feel like that at that first angle that you're standing on, that 10 or 15 degree angle, that you're holding up real well. But let me tell you, it gets increasingly faster as you go over the edge. Don't even go that direction. If you start feeling that you cannot control yourself, and you're dating a girl, and you get to a point where you just don't feel like you can control yourself, it may be time to break up. It may be that that is too much of an issue in your relationship, and you need to reform the relationship around a friendship and back off. If there's someone in your office that you know that you can't stay away from, maybe you need to start looking for another job. You say, that's radical. Absolutely. It's absolutely radical. Do what it takes. Final question is, what will the future look like if I fall? Ask yourself the question, what will my future look like if I fall? Chapter 7, verse 26 says, many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. Picture I have in my mind is the picture of Ebenezer Scrooge standing with the ghost of Christmas present, looking at an unmarked grave where his body is going to be laying in the future with no mourners there. And he says, listen, if you don't turn it around, this is where you're going to end up. And I see the ghost of pleasures past standing with so many men and women who have given their lives away because they've traveled down the road. What would you give to destroy your spouse? What would you give to destroy a young girl's life with a pregnancy, a venereal disease, or just ripping her heart out? What would you give for that? What would you give to look into the faces of your kids that say, I don't know how to be a dad because I didn't have a dad growing up. He ran off with someone else. I don't know how to be a mom because my mom went from guy to guy, or simply from guy to guy. How much would you give for that? It's not worth it. Sexual immorality will destroy your life. And many of you know that. I mean, you're living with the pain of that today. We can stand for truth. We can allow sex to be that wonderful thing that God intended it to be. But we've got to make a commitment to sexual purity. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, as we come to you, we just thank you that you have given us a plan by the power of your Spirit to use the good gifts that we've received for good purposes. And we just pray that you would give us the courage and the wisdom to guard our hearts. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.